The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Enter the villains.
Wait, is that us? Are we the bad guys?
Yes.
Cool, I get to wear black.
Yes. Welcome, everyone. The episode that we have been dreading... threatening you with since, what, April?
Oh, God, yeah, something like that.
It's finally time that we can no longer avoid it. The Hugo Awards.
Dun, dun, dun.
Welcome, everyone, this episode of H2O. My name is Jason Hunt. Sitting across from me is Mr. Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
The evil leftist liberal Timothy Harvey.
I'm not evil. I'm just not.
I guess I should introduce myself as the card-carrying member of the vast right-wing conspiracy.
Or we like to call them the evil empire.
Yes, exactly. One thing that we have talked about, and one of the reasons why we've tried to avoid this, and we've talked about it a little bit in our 75th episode we recorded at Kansas City Comic Con, the fact that politics... has gotten in the middle of all of this. I think that we can agree, and most people, I think, are at this point where they're saying the Hugo Awards are broken. And whatever your political stripe, whatever your leaning or position is on this whole kerfuffle, is the favorite word of the day for everybody to talk about this. Whatever your position is, I think we can all sit there and at least have that one point that we can come back to and say, yeah, the Hugos are broken.
Well, what's really unfortunate here is that you know, both sides are rather foolishly claiming victory here.
Oh, yeah.
And the people who lost out here are the fans. Because no matter what you look at, the slate we ended up with, the slate of nominees,
mm-hmm.
Would have had a different form of some kind,
yeah,
if this hadn't happened.
Right.
And anytime you politicize, I use politicize in the broad sense, not left, right, just politicize.
Right,
you know,
right,
there's a lot more to politicizing than breaking it down into binary nonsense.
Yeah.
Which, unfortunately, we'll probably be doing some binary nonsense because none of this stuff is binary. No.
There is no clear, you know. I mean, there's he said and she said on both sides and all of that. I guess maybe what we should probably do to start with is start with a little bit of positive about the Hugos, because there is a little record participation. In the 2015 Hugo Awards. I mean, no matter what your motivation was, if you participated in the World Science Fiction Society process this year,
mm-hmm.
It was more than ever.
Yeah.
5,914 voters.
Mm-hmm.
There were 5,950 total votes because there were paper ballots as well as online ballots. More than 57% of the convention members eligible to vote cast ballots this year, the highest level of participation in the Hugo Awards voting in the past 10 years. I saw something about, I think, over 11,000 people participated, because you had not only that, the voting members who were actually there physically present at the event,
mm-hmm.
both last year at LawnCon and this year, but also all of the supporting memberships that were purchased in order for people to nominate and vote.
Right.
Record numbers, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the things that the puppy regiment said they wanted to do is increase the number of participants in the process, because the Hugo Awards, and I've got to admit, going into this, I thought the Hugo Awards were a lot bigger than they were.
Oh, yeah. So that's something else to talk about right there.
They're not. I mean, they're itty bitty, tiny insignificant number compared to how many people are fans of the genre. I mean, we've talked on a number of occasions here the difference between, you know, when you're talking about comic book movies,
mm-hmm.
you know, the fact that the studios are shouldn't be beholden or probably not beholden to the source material so much because you've got, what, some 2, 3, 4 million people seeing a movie as opposed to
3,000.
Yeah, 30,000, 40,000 people reading a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
This is even more insignificant than that.
Oh, yeah. When you think about it, that 5,000 people, 5,000, that is a really tiny number.
Yeah. Well, and the number of people who actually nominated anything is even smaller than that.
Right.
I mean, we'll go through some of the numbers here in this hour, but and I'm looking and I can't see where I found it. I've got so many tabs open. It was an opinion piece in The Guardian,
mm-hmm.
asking the question whether or not the Hugos are even relevant anymore. And I'm not sure that they are, because I have lost count of how many times I've run across on the web somewhere the lament that the Hugos no longer have the prestige that they used to. I've seen a number of places, various different people, both in the industry, you know, in the field of science fiction as writers and editors, but also just regular readers,
right,
sitting there saying, "Used to be, if you had a Hugo book, you knew you were going to get a really good story, and now." It doesn't mean necessarily that you're going to get a really good story, because some of the most recent stuff that's won a Hugo has been not all that great. And you and I have both said that we need to read more of them.
Yeah.
And that's going to be part of the master plan for this coming year, because with Worldcon coming here to Kansas City, we've got a lot of homework to do.
Oh, yeah.
But I did read If You Were a Dinosaur, My Love, which was nominated for a Hugo. It mm-hmm. won one of the other ones. It won a Nebula, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
Utter dreck. It is revenge porn dreck. Mm. Have you read it?
I have not.
If You Were a Dinosaur, You Could Eat the People That Bullied You is basically this story. It's kind of amusing. It's not really. It's not even really a story. It's an if-then proposition poem kind of thing. That was the think piece.
Right.
But it's basically saying, if you were a dinosaur, then you could kill the people who tortured you. If you were a dinosaur, you could eat the bullies. If you were a dinosaur, you could go back and rip to shreds the people who beat you with the pool cue. That was the story. And I thought, why in the world would this crap be nominated for a Hugo? And it makes me wonder if the puppies have a point that in recent years, stuff that's been nominated has been nominated because it's message first as opposed to story first. And you and I have said on a number of occasions, story.
Oh, yeah.
Story matters first. And
oh, yeah.
I don't care if you got a message. That's fine if you got a message. Star Trek had messages.
Oh, yeah.
But you got to tell a good, entertaining story.
Well, one thing you really have to bear in mind that science fiction has long been message-laden literature.
Yeah, and I'm not arguing that point.
And it has been. You could argue it's been a place for, and I'm not going to use the word liberal because it's maybe progressive in the sense that it's forward-looking. It's kind of, you know, and
maybe
sometimes using that format to look at ourselves.
Sure.
And, you know, using a science fiction format to make an analysis.
Well, science fiction has always been about self-examination.
Sure. But
where are we? Where are we going?
Sure. But there's a lot of, you know, the outward looking, the very, you know, the forward looking, the very, you know, expand, grow into the universe, blah, blah, blah. But it should always be story, because at the end of the day, if you don't enjoy reading it, no one's going to read it.
Right.
or watch it or whatever. I mean, because you have to, if you don't tell a good story, you're kind of screwed. Now, the other, I think one of the things that's so very curious about the whole thing to me is that 100% of this is subjective.
Oh yeah,
you cannot. Yeah, there is no absolute anything to any of this. There's no, again, we come back to this binary thing. There's no. This is a good book. This is a bad book. It's I don't like this book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the message. I don't like the characters. I don't like whatever. I don't like it. I do not like green eggs and ham. But it also is, you know, the people who like a book, you know. I like some really, really bad movies.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm entertained. So it becomes this, you know, it becomes this very strange thing where we are talking about a series of awards, and every award show, or every award period. I mentioned the Oscars before we started recording. All you have to do is look at the Oscar winners of any.
Oh yeah.
Year.
Yeah.
And what's his name? The guy who directed Crash. The Crash won the Best Picture Award, and he's now saying, you know, I shouldn't have won that. The film shouldn't have won. He goes, you know, yeah, I'm proud of the movie, but we shouldn't have gotten Best Picture.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you all you have to do, I mean, you hit the internet and type in, you know, bad Oscar decisions, and you can go back to the beginning of the Oscars.
1977.
It was a dark year. Little picture came out, made a ripple.
Brandon Kempner has a website called Chaos Horizons.
Mm-hmm.
It is award data
mm-hmm.
analysis.
Right,
and even in the comment threads, he says, "Stick to the data."
Right.
We're all talking about the data. We're not talking about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get political. We're looking at the numbers.
Right.
It is a number-crunching site.
Right.
2015 Hugo Stats initial analysis. This was posted August 23rd. Preliminary numbers from the stats. He's looking at, now I've got right here
mm-hmm.
in my...
Wait, are you holding actual paper?
I'm actually holding actual paper.
What are you, some
paper.
Sort of Philistine? Luddite.
I am. So anyway, so I've got the numbers here.
Right.
5,950 total votes.
Mm-hmm.
Rabid Puppies looks to be a little less than 10% of
right.
that in his analysis here. Let's see here.
No, I saw that the Sad Puppies actually have slightly smaller numbers than the Rabid Puppies.
He says that initial Rabid Puppy estimate between 525 and 550,
uh-huh.
10% of the vote. Sad Puppy estimate 400 to 500.
Right.
So 9%. So you get 10% and 9%. So they're about even.
What I would just like to say, the Sad Puppies, I thought, I don't agree with them, but at least they had an argument to make.
Mm-hmm.
The Rabid Puppies is just like, oh no, they're not making an argument. They're trying to make a point.
Right.
And there's a difference between making an argument and a point.
Okay, yeah. There is. Okay, so using the same data analysis, they're looking at the No Award votes.
Mm-hmm.
Best novella, 3459.
Mm-hmm.
Best short story, 3053.
Mm-hmm.
Best related work, 3259. Best editor short form, 2672. Best editor long form, 2496. Best novelette, which actually did get one,
mm-hmm.
1732, no award.
Right.
Now, he said these numbers are all pretty close. You know, best novella, best short story, best related work are all pretty close. Seems the max no award number. People who couldn't stand any puppy pick when there were more valid choices, such as in the editor award, no award was still picking up 2,500 to 2,600 votes.
Okay.
In a case where a category was almost swept, the number was close to 2,000. So I'm calling the no awarders at 2,500 to 3,450. It's a big spread.
Right.
But is it over 50% of the total pool of voters? Now, this is where it gets interesting. And I'm going to read this quote. I'm stunned at the 2,500 no awarders in the editor categories. There were some mainstream decent editors on that list. If 2,500 people were voting no award on that, that's out of principle.
Yep, possible.
Those are the people who said, we are going to burn it down. And that's exactly what they did. And I can say that with a reasonable degree of certainty because I sat and watched the live show.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard the applause after every no award was announced.
Right.
And I think at the third one, there were some boos. And that's when David Gerald said, applause is appropriate, boos are not.
Mm-hmm.
Which can be taken two ways. Depending on how you look at it, depending on your point of view. You know, everything is true from a certain point of view, yeah. Right?
You know? Right. You're all, you know, even the villain thinks they're the hero of their own story.
Exactly. So, one way to look at it, and this is the way that I took it initially just to read that, is they announced no award, there's applause, there's booing. Gerald said, hey, it's okay to applaud the no award, it's not okay to boo, meaning He-Man Woman Haters Club rules are in place.
Okay.
All right. That's
sure.
One way.
That's one way.
Because of the timing of it, that's why I think that's how it went.
Mm.
The other way you could look at it is Gerald sitting there saying, hey, we got to be good sports. But being a good sport does not mean that you applaud the decision to completely do away with an award rather than give it to the wrong person.
But see, I look at all of this, and having not having seen the live, just having read all the stuff about it, for the no award stuff,
mm-hmm.
It's a much simpler explanation to me than to sit there and go, we're not going to play, then we're going to burn it down. I'm sorry,
I see it the same way. The puppies nominated the slate. We're not going to vote it. We're just going to burn it down and keep
anybody
from getting it.
It's not burning it down. It's looking at it and going, this is rigged. We're not going to do it.
If it were one or two, five?
Well, yeah, but that's exactly why. If you're looking at a slate which is dominated by what is an open manipulation, and mm-hmm. that's not a slam. They admitted that's what they did.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
So if you're going to sit there and look, I mean, it's a much more Occam's razor decision to sit there and go, all right, this particular category is rigged, no award, and it's crappy, and it might be a touch childish, it doesn't have to be childish. I could very easily, and again, like I said, it seems like a much simpler solution to me to have someone sit there and go, okay, this category is really, you know, really rigged.
Right.
I'm not gonna vote. I'm gonna put no award.
Okay. So best editor short form.
Uh-huh.
This is one of the ones that got no award.
Mm-hmm.
No award 2672. Mike Resnick. 873 passes in the first pass.
Mm-hmm.
There were a total of 4,850 votes.
Right.
Vox Day came in second behind Resnick.
Mm-hmm.
Now then, if you switch and you go to position two, see, I'm looking at all of this. You've got five slots for the finalists.
Right.
And based on how the votes go, they decide who wins what position, and whoever gets number one is gets the most votes is that they're the one that gets Hugo.
Sure.
So Mike Resnick came in second, 1,210 votes.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer Brozick, 1,043. Brian Thomas Schmidt, 809. Vox Day, 900.
Right.
Now, what this tells me is that without the no award, Mike Resnick, who is not liberal,
mm-hmm.
I understand, he would have gotten best editor short form. Best editor long form.
Right.
No award, 2496. Toni Weisskopf, 1216. She came in, final pass. She came in second place with 14-19. Mm-hmm. Sheila Gilbert third, 22 with 12-22. Ann Sowards, 11-59. Jim Mintz rounded out 13-34 with the last. So, Tony Weisskopf, who is a respected, held in high regard editor at Bayon, mm-hmm. not Tor,
right?
Because there's a whole thing out there now, and has been for years. People say that Bayon is the evil empire.
Yeah, okay.
And mm-hmm. granted, Tom Doherty started both of them, Tor and Bayon, but Bayon will publish anybody,
right?
No matter what their political stripe.
Right.
And the contention is, from various corners, that Bayon is not the... They're from the wrong side of the track, as it were, because they're not Tor, and they're not Patrick Hayden Nielsen and his wife, Teresa. Now, that editor long form, I'm given to understand that the editor long form category was created because Tor and the Hayden Nielsens made enough noise that the category was created specifically for them. And Patrick Hayden Nielsen has won 8.
Why?
And Tor, as a publishing house, has dominated the Hugos for the last 20-some-odd years with, 30, 40 Hugos among the various different categories?
Probably, yeah.
So, all of this is one of these things that says... Maybe it's not necessarily left and right politics so much as it's high school social politics. You have the cheerleaders and the football players sitting at the popular table. And you've got this other group that's not socially acceptable because of whatever reasons. They're not part of the club. And I think they squawked long enough, loud enough, that it had an effect. And then the popular crowd said, okay, we're just going to take the balls home and there won't be any game. I mean, the fact that they made this, the asterisk, did you see that?
Mm-mm.
It's this thing you can buy to raise money for Sir Terry Pratchett, okay?
Okay,
and that,
sure.
To me, is... It's fine that they're raising money for Pratchett's charity,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's a little bit, what's the word that I'm looking for?
I don't know.
I don't want to say predatory because that's not the word that I'm looking for. It's the fact that in any sports competition, you have tournaments, you have bowl games, you have, championship games, competitions, and whatnot. Whenever there's any kind of controversial result, there's always an asterisk at the end of that record.
Right.
And the joke, so-called joke this year, is that the Hugos, 2015 Hugos, would be asterisked. So what did they do? They made an asterisk. They made an asterisk that you could buy to right. raise money. And I thought, wait a minute. That right there is another indicator that they're not taking this seriously. They're taking it seriously, but not for the right reasons. They're looking at it as the puppies are a threat. Whether you're looking at the sad puppies, the rabid puppies, all the puppies, it doesn't matter. We're going to kick them. Kick them to the curb because they don't get to play in our sandbox. That's what everything... And I'm seeing...
Okay. There's a major flaw with that argument. They played. You can't say that they didn't get to play because they played. And one of the biggest arguments
but
against...
But they played up until the point where nobody wins.
Well, but the... Okay.
We don't want the right people to win, so nobody will win.
Well, but again, it comes down to if you feel like you've been manipulated and you don't want to be... Saying we're not going to play is a perfectly valid response, and that's not political. Okay. That's you.
It's not left right political, but it is political because it's still.
But it's still.
It's our club.
Well, yeah. Except for the fact that it's all of our club, and somebody decided that because they weren't happy with the messages of the books. Again, we're coming back to subjective opinions.
Mm-hmm. Right, now I get that.
And you're saying that, you know, we don't like it. We don't like the message, so we're going to rig the vote. And we're going to be honest about it. I mean, again, not a fan of the rabid puppies at all or the people involved, but the sad puppies at least were, you know, very, very upfront about what they were doing.
Right.
But at the same time, they rigged the vote. And it is a perfectly, I would like to think that if I were part of the voting pool, that I would sit there and read the books and vote for what was there. But I could also very easily see going, this is rigged, and this is rigged right here, and we know this whole category is heavily influenced by the rigged votes.
Right.
I'm going to vote no award because I'm down to two books, and that's okay. Not a fair thing.
So, Tony Weisskopf, well-respected editor. A lot of these authors know her, have worked with her in some way, shape, or form or fashion. All right? She's not a puppy.
Right.
She got nominated.
I know.
Not the first time that she's been nominated.
Mm-hmm.
And had more votes, even without, you take away the no right. award, she had more votes than anybody else in that category in the history of the Hugos.
And this is why you come back to, we, the fans, lost. Because there's only 5,000 people who are part of this pool. And it is so incredibly easy for a small number of people to basically jack up the vote.
And when and I read that she had left during the ceremony after that no award announcement for her category, that's actually not the case. She never even went to the ceremony because they handed those little asterisks out prior to the ceremony, and she knew then that it was done. And she didn't even bother to go.
Yeah.
There is a story. Where is it? I've got so many tabs open here.
That's kind of the problem with something like this. There's no...
No, not that one. Here we go. All right. This is on Facebook. Michael Rothman. This is his first time. Took the boys to Worldcon. I'm just gonna read this. I took my kids to Worldcon to expose them to fandom, capital F, and I've consciously shielded them from any of the politics of the kerfuffle associated with the literary sides that were in play. When we attended, we had good seats, and they were excited to see if some of their choices would make it. Let's just say that my boys ended up being exposed to some of their categories being utterly eradicated from eligibility due to this thing that I'd shielded them from. They couldn't understand why their short story choice evaporated into something called no award. As I briefly explained, the audience was cheering because of that decision, and the MC made a point of saying that cheering was appropriate and boos were not. This is what we were talking about with Gerald earlier. Right. My kids were shocked. Shocked not only by not winning, but by having an entire category's rug being pulled out from under it and then having all the adults, many of which were old enough to be their grandparents, cheering for something my kids looked at as an unfair tragedy. I'll admit to having feared this outcome, yet this was my children's introduction to fandom, capital F. We're driving home, and they're of the opinion that they aren't particularly interested in this fandom thing. I find that a great shame, and I blame not the people who established the ballots to vote for my kids enjoyed a great deal of what they read on the ballots, but as my kids noted, they blamed the ones who made them feel like the rug was pulled out from under me. I'd offered fandom my boys now reject them. And yes, the picture, he's posted a photograph of them standing there, was before they walked into the ceremonies. They're excited about it. I just find it a pity that they didn't feel anything other than bewilderment and bitterness toward the people in the auditorium after the ceremonies. And that is consistent with a lot of stuff that I've been reading from first-timers who are coming into this late, who are reading about both sides of what's been going on this whole time. What is going on with this Hugo thing? What's this Hugo, huh? What, huh? What, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And they're all looking at it saying, what a bunch of babies.
Well, but again, we come down to this has become such an emotionally charged thing that we all lost. We all lost.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we did.
And no, I'm not going to say that nobody comes out looking good, because I think some of the folks who decided they weren't going to be part of it at all, when they were nominated, they said, I prefer not to be involved with this, or probably the ones who are going to come across the best, because they just didn't want to be a part of the thing that was the thing.
Maybe.
And they said, okay, you know what? Not interested. Don't feel like playing. Not going to be part of a political whatever it is.
Yep.
And at this point, the fact that the awards weren't burnt to the ground is kind of a small victory, because the vitriol back and forth at this point, the fact that there were awards that there wasn't a stabbing. Because, like I said, the whole thing is just a bloody mess.
It is.
And what's interesting is that, and I want to say it was IO9. I can't remember. It may have been. They raised a very good point about the whole argument that the sad puppies were making, that everything is rigged anyway.
Yeah.
Their argument was, well, how can that be if you were able to do what you did? You can't have it both ways. You can't have it if it's completely rigged. You shouldn't have been able to do what you did, which actually,
but
makes a certain
argued,
amount of sense.
But it could be argued that they didn't get to complete what they were doing. They made their point by the very fact that everybody just kicked their nominees completely out of the process.
Well, no, but they shouldn't have been able to get their nominees there if it's rigged. Because they have no way of knowing what the total votes were.
Right.
The Hugos control that data.
Right.
Okay. So if you sit there and say the votes are rigged, we can't get our stuff on here, and then you get your stuff on there, you can't have it both ways. Those are contradictory states of reality. You can't have them both ways.
Not necessarily, because they said the process is broken because there's a certain number of people that participate every year, and it's the same people every year.
Uh-huh.
And this is what we're going to do.
Welcome to awards.
I know, but we have other people this year.
Mm-hmm.
There were plenty of people participating who never have before.
Sure. Uh-huh.
Some of them came from the puppy group. Some of them came from the other side.
Oh, yeah.
So you can have it. I don't want to say you can't have it both ways, but you can have one situation leading to the other where you have a recognition that the process is flawed, and result of that is you can take advantage of that flaw to do what they did.
But the thing
and that's
is,
what they did.
Well, but the thing is that the actual if you have rigged the game so that your happy liberal messages can get through,
uh-huh,
then you can't have if it's rigged that way, then
right,
you're not going to get conservative nominees. They're not going to make it to the they're not going to make it on the ballot.
Which of the conservative nominees won?
Doesn't matter.
Yes, it does.
No.
Yes, it does.
No.
Because they just threw them out.
They wouldn't even have got there. They would if the game is rigged.
Well,
they wouldn't even have gotten on the ballot, win or not. If the game is rigged, they wouldn't have got there because they have no way of knowing how many votes were cast for those categories to
right
get them on the ballot.
No, I understand that.
So if the game is rigged, and besides, the other question is okay, define conservative. Define liberal, you know, because it's we're doing this sweeping generalization thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is complete, and let me make this very, very clear. We are broadcasting this on the internet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is
okay.
You know,
sweeping generalizations
the bastion of quality.
is the bread and butter of the internet. It's also nonsense, and it always has been. Unfortunately, welcome to American politics.
The number of nominations.
Uh huh.
Total.
Uh huh.
Not votes.
Uh-huh.
Right? This is just the nominations
right
to get things on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Novel 1827.
Mm-hmm.
Novella, 1,083. Novelette, 1031. Short story, 1174. Related work, 1150. Graphic story, 785. Editor, long form, 12. No, best dramatic presentation. This is the movies, 1285. TV, 938. Editor, short form, 870. Long form, 712. Professional artist, 753. I mean, the rest of it is all in triple digits.
Right.
We have more people following us on Facebook than the number of people who nominated any one category
core,
on any of this.
The core issue at the strip away the politics. The problem with the voting for the Hugos, as far as I can tell, is that it is a tiny, tiny number.
Yes.
Okay. It is going to be much more fair. Because just statistically, you increase the number of people you have participating,
right. The better it gets. And that's one of the things that the puppy guys did.
Right, right.
Because Torgerson and Correa both, I went back to their very first that was the beginning. They said, we need more people participating.
And I don't disagree with that at all. The idea, however, that they... Again, I think it's a really flawed argument to claim that the liberals have taken over, and yet you end up on the ballot at all. Because if there really is this grand conspiracy to keep the conservative authors off, which frankly I don't think there is. I just simply don't. I look at when I read these folks, and I guarantee you, let me qualify that. if it was not such a tiny number of people, yeah. I would guarantee you, with statistical 99.999%. probability,
right,
that nobody gives a damn.
Oh no,
about the politics.
Yeah,
now, all they care about is the book.
And that raises the other point that we're going to get into when we get on the other side of the break is the fact that you and I have talked about the fact that we have not read a lot of this.
Right, right.
But one of the things that we're going to get
upset
into
about that.
Yeah, one of the things that we're going to get into, and I've suggested this. I think this is at least my plan, is to. Between now and next year's Worldcon, which is going to be here in Kansas City, we read as many of the Hugo winners as we possibly can.
Oh yeah.
To see if we can determine whether or not, when there was a point at which the Hugos started to skew toward liberal progressive message fiction as opposed to the best in the craft.
And then with the
again, it's going to be subjective, but that qualifier is going to be that is do we start to is there a trend that becomes noticeable at any one point in the history?
Well, statistically, when one of the places they said that they started to see more gender parity and ethnic parity was around 2010, but that. Is not necessarily
correlate. Doesn't necessarily correlate to message.
Correlation and causation are not the same thing.
Right.
Let me say that again, because this is something that people tend to forget. Everywhere in every single subject that anyone ever talks about, correlation is not causation.
Right.
Just because something happens doesn't mean it was caused by ... fill in the blank because it just pick a subject. I swear to God, everybody does it.
I know.
But the thing is that. We also have seen an explosion of writers because it's cool. It's cooler.
Plus you've got so many outlets for it now.
Exactly. And so suddenly if you're, and I guarantee, I was in the book world for 15 years. I can tell you for a fact that, depending on the publishing house, it makes a difference if you're male or female, or because it does. Yep. I mean, statistically, you're looking at like 10 to 15% of some publishing houses' authors are women, and it's not because they're not submitting. Now, again, there's so many different outlets now, it's starting to change. You've got more women writers who are more prominent. There have always been women science fiction writers and some really fantastic ones. There's always been male science fiction writers and some really fantastic ones, and black ones and white ones and Asian and Hispanic and straight and gay, and it doesn't matter.
Hang on to that thought.
I'll hold that
because
thought.
Because that brings up something that I want to bring up. Uh-oh. at the other side of the break. We are going to take a break, refill coffee mugs, and continue our conversation about the broken Hugo Awards.
Dun, dun, dun.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about some possible solutions Some things that have been proposed, the rules, changes that are in play at this point, right after this break. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Where can you get Age of Ultron stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at SuperheroStuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. SuperheroStuff.com, where heroes shop.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at atomiccotton.com. Atomic Cotton, shirts and art for fans by fans.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, and if you're one of the dedicated listeners for this show, first of all, thank you. Second, you are sharing with others, are you not? And you should be aware by now, we have many shows as part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio, our Marvel discussion on Level 1187, the DC chat on the Rogues Gallery, Sci-Fi for Chicks talking about various topics, which we also do in mixed company on the Echo Chamber, and H2O, which is our one-on-one discussion between Mr. Harvey and myself, now syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine. Sci-Fi for Me Radio is more than one show, and we'd like to invite you to join us for all of it, or at least try it out and see what you think. And also check out Sci-Fi for Me TV, that's our YouTube channel, where we have interviews, convention panel video, and Week in Review, where we deliver a digest of the news of the week. All part of giving you the most bang for your buck. Oh yeah, wait, no, it's free. So check it out, Sci-Fi for Me Radio and Sci-Fi for Me TV, all part of SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
If you unsubscribe to our podcasts, our legion is doomed. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Back on H2O, probably a little bit of an extended version this hour, this episode, because we're talking about the 2015 Hugo Award results, and you were making the point before the break about the fact that science fiction has always had women, Asian, Black, the writers who are not the white, straight, angry male.
Sure. Now that to be perfectly honest, and because that's just reality.
No.
White men have dominated the publishing industry across the board.
Yeah, no matter what the genre.
Okay. With the exception of romance.
Yep.
And even then, I have some news. A lot of romance writers are guys.
Didn't Stephen King write under a pseudonym for?
Bachman, but it wasn't romance. Little inside baseball of romance writers.
I'm looking at a photograph.
Yeah.
2012 Hugo Award winners. Because I was looking for the photograph of the 2015 crowd because I've seen it, and something struck me about it, and I've been looking for it and I can't find it.
Uh-huh.
But I did find a bunch of others.
Uh-huh.
2012 Hugo Award winners. I'm looking at this. I see Neil Gaiman. Mm-hmm. I see George R.R. Martin.
Mm-hmm.
I see, I think that's Charlie Jane in the back. I don't see any Black people.
No?
They are all white except for one Asian guy.
Yep.
That's the 2012 winners. There's an Asian woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty good mix, male and female, but they're all white, and maybe all of them over 40?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, 2004 Hugo Award winners. I'm looking at this photograph.
Right.
All of them up on stage. Neil Gaiman's up there again.
Mm-hmm.
I see. And I see one Asian guy.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is lily white.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all over 40.
Sure.
Let's see here. There was one more that I just ran across. And I can't remember what it is. Oh, yeah, here it is. This is the 2001 Hugo Award winners.
Right.
Nope. All white. And this is the group that accuses the puppies of being racist. Now, I'm not saying this group is racist.
Mm-hmm.
But for them to sit there and say the puppies are racist, you know, Torgerson is married to a black woman, and for whatever you want to say about Ted Beal, he's what, half Mexican, okay. Filipino, whatever. There's a disconnect in perception.
Well, okay.
Because the narrative. Wait a minute. The narrative in all of the media has been, and this goes back to the politics, but the narrative of the media has been the puppies are racist, misogynist, homophobic bigots. And you will see those words in Entertainment Weekly, which was a story that had to get retracted. You see it in Huffington Post and IO9 and all of the mainstream, what we call, you know, the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody picked up on it. The Guardian, all of them. They all picked up on this narrative that you've got a bunch of racist white guys who don't want anybody else to play in the box,
mm-hmm.
trying to game the system. When their slate of people was a pretty good mix from everybody who objectively looked at it, male, female, white,
which is,
Hispanic,
well,
whatever.
Okay. No. The sad puppies was. The rabid puppies was not.
Well,
okay. And
either
there,
way.
No, there's a difference between the two. There is a significant difference between the two. Because
well,
the
what
art,
I'm saying,
the,
though, well, is no, you can't say that the puppies were racist.
Okay, but you hold on.
Because
you have to, you, no, you, have to distinguish, you have to distinguish between the two groups of puppies. They're not the same people.
I know they're not.
Okay, but Vox Day, Beal.
See, everybody else lumped them all together.
Well, but you know, that was
part of the thing.
I am not going to be held accountable for other people's mistakes.
Well, and Korea even said, you know, I'm FDR, Torgerson's Roosevelt. We got stuck with Stalin.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he's making that comparison.
Right. Because they're, if you want to, and well, the problem is that they do get lumped together because they unfortunately that's what happens, because the argument that Beal is a racist has been made by many, many people because of the stuff that he's written. Now, whether or not he is or not, or he's just a horrible, horrible, horrible troll, or whatever the reasons.
I see one black guy in the 2013 winners.
Okay, but also, I, you know, again, there is statistically, and has been for quite some time, a smaller number of black writers in science fiction.
I know, but I'm just saying, argument has been for the last year, inclusive and diversity,
sure.
And,
uh-huh,
diversity,
yeah.
And diversity.
Well,
and diversity.
But yeah, but that
I don't see any here.
Well, but that you're looking at one metric. If you're looking at skin tone, that's one metric. But yeah, I know. But I can't. There's. But it doesn't necessarily, just because it's, you know, skin tone. Again, we're not talking binary stuff here. You know, inclusiveness does not mean just black people or Hispanic people or Asian people or whatever.
I know,
you know,
but I'm just saying this is what I see here.
Yeah, well, you know, but it's especially with inclusiveness, you know, it literally is a spectrum at this point because it's everything now. I mean,
it should be.
Well, yeah, it should be. I don't know. It's just what's really kind of frustrating for me is that it is. There is no winner in this. There is just no winner.
Right.
Nobody.
There's not.
They are, and everybody wants to call themselves the winner. Everybody wants to say that they won the. And nobody won.
According to this, in the Chaos Horizon, you know, we talked about earlier what the slate would have looked like without the puppies.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Best novel category would have looked like without the with no puppy votes at all. Ancillary Sword, Goblin Emperor, Three Body Problem, Lock In by Scalzi, City of Stairs. And I don't remember who it was. It was either Correa or Torgerson who said something about the Three Body Problem would have been on Beal's list, but he didn't read it in time.
Okay.
He read it a month after everything closed, or it would have been on his list too.
Good.
Which raises the question, okay, if the Three Body Problem had been on the puppy's list, what would have happened to Best Novel?
Well, and that's a very good question, and that's the unfortunate thing. That's because...
And that goes to the point of the whole thing being broken, and
oh,
it's,
yeah. Well,
it's our club and you can't play. I mean, Teresa Hayden Nielsen even said, it's our award.
Well, but here's the thing. That's every award ever.
I'm not saying that that's not that.
This is this just happens to be a very public, nasty version. Mm-hmm. And what you have to give the Hugos credit for is that they release a ton of data. This stuff ends up on the website. You actually can see the numbers. The Academy Awards have a much larger audience and generate a statistically, but the term is metric crap ton of money.
Right.
And it is much less open. In fact, pretty much when it comes to most entertainment awards, the actual breakdowns are much harder to get your hands on. Yeah. They're out there. You can find them, usually years and years after the fact. But, I mean, and so you end up with this curious thing where we're getting a lot more information out of the Hugos, which is a way, in many ways, it's a way to show how much more broken it is, even though we know, even though no one can accurately claim that something like the Oscars is not...
Oh, they're not objective at all.
No. Well, and to some degree... The expecting of an award show or an award to be given of any kind to be 100% objective is a lovely, lovely thought. And I would like that to be the case, but I also, sad to say, do not live in a world with rainbows and unicorns.
Mm-hmm.
As much as, well, that get actually kind of boring after a while, all the rainbows and unicorns.
Well, and the other thing, too, is when you're... When your numbers are such, I'm wondering if maybe Hugo's may have put out a bunch of the statistical data this year in order to sit there and say, "Hey, look, it's not rigged," and people are looking at the data saying, "Well, yeah, but if you hadn't voted this way in lockstep for the no award thing simply because reasons, then you would have had a whole lot different result." And the fact that there was a record number of no awards this year has a lot of people sitting there going, yeah, they picked up their marbles and they left in a fit of pique.
Well, you could argue that. But I still maintain, because it makes a lot more sense to me to someone sit there and go, this is rigged. I'm not voting for this category. And that's not, I'm taking my marbles and going home. It's, this category is rigged. I don't want to play.
But see, Tony Weisskopf would have been on there anyway.
Oh, I know. Like I said, nobody wins. The writers don't win. The fans don't win. The Hugos don't win. The puppies don't win. Mm-hmm. The rabbit puppies don't win. Nobody won.
Speaking of Patrick Hayden Nielsen.
Yes.
Patrick Nielsen Hayden. I've been saying that backwards.
Oh,
I'm
okay,
sorry.
Yeah.
Patrick Nielsen Hayden. We must be correct in our reportage.
Yes.
John Wright's wife,
mm-hmm.
who also is a writer,
right,
is published at Tor,
mm-hmm.
so is one of Patrick Nielsen Hayden's writers.
Sure.
Her name, she publishes under the name of L. Jaggy Lamplighter.
Mm-hmm.
Jaggy Lamplighter Wright. Now, John Wright is one of those evil, right-wing, homophobic... nut jobs.
Well,
that,
he has written some very homophobic things.
He's Catholic.
Well,
if you subscribe to a particular faith and you practice that faith with any degree of credibility, Catholic or Christian or whatever, then you're going to be against homosexuality or abortion.
Okay.
That's a completely different thing.
That is a matter of opinion. There are many Christian faiths, various versions of Christianity that would disagree with you on that.
You can tolerate the people without tolerating their
There are many different beliefs. Versions of Christianity that would disagree with you on that.
Anyway.
There are 150 flavors of Christianity in the United States.
Anyway,
they don't all agree with each other.
Back to the point.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So Wright's wife goes up to Nielsen Hayden to offer an olive branch, just to talk. You know,
sure.
Hey, you know, let's just, and he just blows up at her about her husband. Man, I mean, just
not cool.
No. John Wright was not there. A lot of people speculate that if he had been, then fisticuffs probably would have ensued because of Nielsen Hayden's behavior, which some people are saying he should apologize for. And I think that probably is the case.
Yeah. No, I think especially you, he should definitely apologize.
Now, she says that it wasn't as bad as people made it out when they told Wright about it. Apparently it grew legs in the telling.
Oh, they always do.
Between point A to point B. But it's still, if I'm going to be shouting at you in a public place over something that somebody else did, using profanity and...
Nobody won, Jason.
Ugly speech.
Nobody won. And everybody got angry.
Yes.
Everybody got angry and everyone, because people were calling each other names on both sides, and all that does is escalate it. If you call somebody a racist and they don't think they're a racist, they're going to be unhappy about it. If you turn around and call somebody something, liberal, pinko, whatever it is, and they don't look at themselves that way, they're going to be upset about it.
That's right.
And it's all going to turn into a whole bunch of people being angry. And if we've noticed one thing that involves the internet, is that when people get angry, they take to the internet and they just make it worse.
But one thing
nobody won.
One thing that I have noticed is that a lot of people that are coming into this late, and I've made this point already, that everybody's acting like babies, but a lot of people are coming away with the idea that Hugo's were broken, they burned it down. So how do we fix it? Because coming to Kansas City next year, we're going to be right in the thick of it.
Oh, I know. Yay us!
And we haven't even talked about the pre-show. I don't know that we want to get into the pre-show, because the pre-show was all politics.
Well, and
I mean, it was front and center. I wish Obama had been elected president of Canada politics. I mean, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't even about the books. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even about the quality of the stories. It wasn't anything about the craft.
That's where it all went, because the
ceremony was pretty restrained.
Well, as it should have been, but the pre-shows.
Did you see any of it?
I did not. But I've read about it, and you told me about what you saw. And let's face it,
all politics.
No pre-show of any kind is of any value.
Well, I got to thinking about that, and there's discussion. George R. R. Martin was up there, and they had a number of different authors who were not in the nominations this year, talking about the whole thing with the puppies and the nominations of the politics. I wish Obama had been elected president of Canada and that. Okay, so all of that's up on stage. One of the guys from Radio Free Scarl actually said that.
I'm trying to understand the point of that, actually.
I don't
get that.
So anyway, they were making the point that they were liberals and they have liberal ideology, and they were actually admitting to a certain extent that left and right politics played a part in this whole thing.
Well, no, there were many...
They were expressing the opinion.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, let me say that.
Yeah,
okay. Because they're not part of the process.
Right, I was going to say that they don't...
Get but it got me thinking, because the people who were hosting the pre-show, who Radio Free Scarro guys, actually voted in the Hugos.
Right.
And I got to thinking about that, and I thought, if we... you and I, or members of our team, were involved in any kind of pre-show antics with the Hugos.
Yes.
I'm thinking we probably, I'll speak for me personally because I can't speak for anybody else. It would probably be in my best interest, as a geek journalist of sort, not to have a vote. Because that way I can be objective. And I can sit there and I can say, this happened, this happened, this happened. He said this, she said this, and she said this. And I don't have any, there's no perception that I have any agenda, because I have no dog in the fight, because I didn't pay to vote. I can read the stories. I can give you opinion of what I think of the stories.
Right.
But I don't have any vested interest in one winner over another if I don't vote.
Right, sure.
And as a journalist, and this is where we can get back into the whole game journalism thing, the ethics and journalism argument.
Right.
Should people who cover the Hugos be allowed to vote for the Hugos or any award, Locus or any of this. Now, some of these awards are peer reviews, so you have to be, you know, like Science Fiction Writers of America or something. Have to be. I think for Nebula or
sure,
one of them.
Sure. Uh-huh.
But for the fan awards, are we fans first? Or are we journalists first?
Well, I think honestly, if we're going to report on something, then the goal we always try to be as objective as possible.
And I think we've done fairly well tonight. We haven't thrown anything at each other yet.
No, okay, here's the thing, we don't talk about this much on the show, that we have different political views,
right?
Because it's not really a factor in what we do here, and we generally, which it shouldn't be. I mean, honestly,
and really, it doesn't come into play a whole lot outside of this.
No,
either.
It doesn't. I mean, every now and again, you know, it pops up, but it's not the basis of our friendship. It has nothing to do with what it is that we're trying to do here.
Right.
And frankly, the world would better fit a lot if people would just shut up about their politics and just try and live a life. But that's not going to happen.
No. Okay.
So, but we should try and keep it separate. Yep. We should, and maybe we don't get to vote if we're going to look at it objectively.
Yeah. Me personally, I'm thinking I probably should not. Everybody gets to make that decision for themselves.
Right.
Given the fact that I don't pay anybody here, you're all on your own. But
wait, yeah. I'm not getting paid. I quit.
I give you coffee.
That's true. That is kind of a payment of a kind.
The 4 and 6. Rule change. Let's get into fixing this.
Mm-hmm.
This is a discussion here. And of course, the predictions are that any rules changes are basically to cement the stranglehold that the clique has over the group anyway. But this is the 4 and 6 rule.
Mm-hmm.
That basically you have the number of nominations that you individually can make goes down to 4 instead of 5. The number of final lists goes from 5 to 6. And basically, no one group or persons or whatever can lock a slate in because nobody can nominate all 6 positions. The theory being that even if there's some overlap, there's still going to be a mix in each category, no matter where the nominations are coming from.
Okay, sure.
Makes a certain amount of sense,
I suppose. Yeah, it does.
The other proposition is the E Pluribus Hugo proposition. This is a 113-page PowerPoint presentation that I have here open on my laptop.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go through all of it again. I've already looked through it again. But basically, what this does, it's very complicated. It makes a certain amount of sense when you sit and think about it, but it's still, both of these still allow for the possibility that you can game the system to a certain extent. But what the E Pluribus Hugo rule would do is, let's say you, Tim Harvey, are going to nominate in the best novel category.
Sure.
Okay, now if you have 1 point in that category. If you nominate 5 titles, then each of those titles gets 1/5 of your point.
Mm-hmm.
If you nominate 4 titles, each of those titles gets 1/4 of your point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Sure.
Now, they go through the round of counts. The lower two, the two that have the least number of points, out of those two, the one with the fewer number of nominations gets eliminated.
Okay.
Okay, so far. All right?
Okay.
Now, if one of yours gets eliminated, then that piece of those points gets spread out over the nominations you have that remain.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, I'm following you.
All right. So then it goes through each of these rounds, eliminating the two lower points out of that, the least number of nominations gets stripped away until you have 5 remaining nominations.
Okay.
And those become the finalists. And each time, basically, your 1 point gets distributed among whichever of your nominations are remaining after each round of elimination.
Sure.
It's very, very complicated. You'd have to have a computer to really track it to make sure that there are no hanging chads.
Well, yeah, it's going to be complicated no matter what you do.
Turn to the person next to you, ask, what's a hanging chad? Because it has been a while.
Yeah, it's coming up on, holy crap, 16 years.
Yeah.
Is it 16 or 12?
16.
Wow.
Yeah. So those are the two rules changes that have been proposed. Now, the way a rules change happens in the World Science Fiction Society, the proposal gets voted on the first year.
Mm-hmm.
If it passes, then it goes to the next year, mm-hmm. which in this case would be Kansas City.
Sure.
And there's another round of voting to ratify the rules change.
Right.
Which means that Sad Puppies 4 next year will still have a chance to have an impact on the nominations.
Sure.
And, of course, it's going to be really hard to accuse them of all being sexist because it's going to be all women running Sad Puppies next year. So we'll see how they characterize them.
Mm-hmm.
But if the rules change, either one of them gets ratified next year in Kansas City, then the year after that in Helsinki is when they'd be in, when that rule would be in place.
Right.
So it's a 2-year process to change the system, mm-hmm. to change the rules.
Right.
Which on the one hand is good because it lets heads cool. And you get a year to sit there and go, really think about what you're doing or what you're about to do and all the ramifications of the decisions that you're about to make.
Oh, wouldn't that be
one nice? Way or the other. So, yeah, it's you're right. Nobody wins in any of these circumstances. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been worse if they had completely nuked it from orbit. And just no awarded everything?
Honestly, I think they should. I think you could make a very strong argument they should not have had a Hugo Awards this year. Because
that only would have just delayed.
No,
all of this.
No. Because what you do is you sit there and go, okay, let's have this discussion. Let's talk about. Because apparently, what didn't really happen in any of this
mm-hmm.
is people sit down and sit there and go, okay, explain to me your thoughts.
Right.
And we will agree to disagree, or we'll have this conversation, or nobody seems to have actually had a rational discussion at any stage of the. It was all vitriol online and name calling and accusations.
And there were a lot of that.
And I don't see anywhere where, and maybe I'm missing it. Maybe it was just so far in the past that it's just not showing up. But I don't see anywhere that the Sad Puppies or the Hugo folks just sat there and went, let's just sit down and talk about this.
There were some interesting and very rational and reasoned back and forths between Larry Correa and George R. R. Martin, between their blogs,
mm-hmm.
back and forth, answering each other's points and counterpoints and whatnot. But given the fact that Martin is not part of the WorldCon people,
right.
You know, how far does that go? But an interesting point is that Martin even admitted that this kind of thing is not new. And we know Scalzi's done it to a certain extent, not to the extreme degree, but Scalzi's done it. Tor, as a publishing house, has
Scalzi,
done it.
Scalzi has been accused of doing it.
Here's a list.
Okay.
Now, Scalzi's done it. Here's a list
uh-huh.
we think are worthy of the Hugos.
Okay.
That's what the puppies did. Now, I can't say
No. They submitted. No. They placed votes. They voted for a list of people.
Each vote comes from an individual person.
I know.
And you can decide
whether or not
you're going to vote the way Vox Day tells you to, or vote your own thing.
But
and everything
this
that I saw
this
was
vast. No, but
here's the list. Go read them. Vote of me if you like them.
But there's this vast accusation, and I don't know John Scalzi. I have no invested interest in this person, but he has been the target of all this lovely accusations of stuff that I don't see any evidence of him.
Not just him. Tor.
Yeah, I know, but as a
company,
his name pops up through all of these folks. He's like, mm-hmm. Scalzi is the devil, and I'm like, for what? Exactly.
Well, it's like Vox Day is the devil for the other side.
No, Vox Day says a lot of horrible, horrible things.
And we've talked about that, and I've seen other people comment that he's playing to a character.
Doesn't matter.
However much of that is true, I don't know.
That's okay.
I don't know. Neither here nor there.
That's fine. But if you're playing, it does matter, because if you're playing to a character and you're not telling anyone else you're playing,
mm-hmm.
then everyone's going to take you seriously. And if your goal is to play a long con joke,
yeah,
at some point you have to let them in. Otherwise, people are going to sit there and go, "You're kind of awful."
Right.
Not to mention, he just wrote a really, really terrible not review of Seven Eves.
Well, here's what we've got to do.
Right.
Because we have yet to have a conversation with the Mid-Americon 2 people.
Right.
And that is going to have to take place here fairly soon after they get a chance to decompress. I completely skipped over this. Have you seen... this is, I think, from 1995. Harlan Ellison's Watching.
Uh-uh.
It's a series of videos that Ellison did. This particular one, number 56, I think it's from 1995. I ran across a link in a comment thread.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Harlan Ellison talking about the Hugos.
Right.
In 1995, this is 20 years ago. And Harlan Ellison's sitting there going, "The Hugos can be bought. Somebody tried to do it this year. I've been accused of it. And somebody actually tried to do it." He didn't name names.
Mm-hmm.
But he's, I mean, this is a 3-minute piece where he basically sits there and goes, "The Hugos are broken here. Maybe not to the extent that they are now."
Well,
it's indicative of the fact that this kind of thing is not new.
No, it's not new. It is at the end of the day. The reality is that it is a awards program, and all awards programs, to some degree, are a popularity contest.
Yep.
And that doesn't mean quality all the time. But then, of course, you're also looking at something called, you know, it's subjective. And that's, yeah. we avoided this for a long, long time for reasons.
I think one of the things, too, though, you got to ask yourself, you know, if the left versus right thing was so easily painted onto this argument, you have to ask yourself why. And yes, Larry Correa is a conservative libertarian gun Second Amendment rights advocate. Okay, fine. Torgerson is military. He's currently mm-hmm. serving overseas.
Sure.
He's conservative.
Mm-hmm.
John Wright's conservative.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the politics are for Kevin Anderson. He was a nominee this year mm-hmm. for the very first time ever in his career, mm-hmm. which I find just flabbergasting to me because he's got some good stuff out there.
Sure.
But I'm wondering, and I don't know how much we want to get into this, but I'm wondering if the Hugo battle is a microcosm for the culture war that's been going on.
I've been thinking about this, and I would disagree. And the reason I disagree is because... Okay, Larry Niven and mm-hmm. Jerry Pournelle are not liberals.
Right.
Okay.
Neither is Robert Silverberg.
Right. Again, people, seriously, 99.9% of readers of any subject do not give a tinker's cuss what your politics are. They are not remotely, and of the 4,000, 2,000, 5,000 people who are voting, with the exception of this year, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it probably doesn't matter to most of them anyway.
Well, see, and that's the other thing. That's something we've got to look into.
Well, because the thing is that, and this would be a sweeping generalization. I am having a hard time thinking of currently. And someone can, and maybe you can, and somebody else can certainly in the comments or email us or whatever.
H2O@scifarforme.com.
I am having a hard time coming up with a current, and again, we did not read the books this year, a lot of the books this year. I'm having a hard time coming up with authors that I know are conservative who are not doing military SF. Who are doing other kinds of SF. There seems to be a presence, again, sweeping generalization, but there seem to be more conservative writers doing military SF or fantasy than necessarily doing quote unquote straight science fiction or whatever.
Rob Cruzy is
a
libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't do military science fiction.
Okay.
He's the Mercury Falls stuff. It's mostly humor.
Yeah.
It's fun stuff. It's like Douglas Adams type stuff.
I enjoy that series to a point. Well, and then I was just like, okay, Jason, where are you going with this?
Mm-hmm. Well, and he's got a couple of new ones out that are not part of that series. But okay. Humor science fiction.
Overall, I enjoyed him.
Yeah. It's good stuff. And
the ending felt flat. That's all right. Yeah. You know. It's an opinion.
It is.
Nothing to do with his politics.
But I don't know where Kevin J. Anderson is on the spectrum.
Well, but the thing is, it kind of doesn't matter.
It shouldn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. To me, it matters exactly zero.
Now, that's you, though.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not, I really don't think I am an outlier here. I don't think the majority of people read genre fiction of any kind based on the political views of the writer. And if they
But you will have people that reject, because we saw some of that with this. I don't know who Larry Correa is, but I'm never going to read him because he's a Republican or whatever.
Right.
And
whoever said that is dumb. I don't care who they are. I don't care how famous they are. They're dumb because he may have a really, really good book. Okay.
Bestseller.
I know. Vox Day just did that with the new Neal Stephenson book.
Well, and
he said that he jumped onto the pinko liberal social warrior thing because and the unfortunate thing is that he did not write a review. He just wrote a paragraph where he dismissed the book.
Right.
And all he says is because it's got a woman president and the mix of like the Benetton ad. That's not what he said. He said something else. And I sat there and I read that going, you do realize there are two women running for president right now, and if one of them gets elected, you're going to be stuck. What are you going to do? What are you going to do if you get one? That's not fiction, man. That's possibly going to happen.
Yeah.
But the thing is that he's dismissing that book because he doesn't like the politics. Well, I guarantee you that Neal Stephenson did not sit down to write a political novel. We know this because he's been interviewed by half a bazillion news outlets about the book.
Mm-hmm.
And he's come out and talked, I wanted to write this kind of book, and I wrote this kind of book. It's an apocalyptic book, and it really isn't an apocalyptic book.
Do we know what his politics are, Neal Stephenson?
No idea.
I don't think he's liberal.
It doesn't matter.
I don't know.
See,
that's just it, though.
It doesn't matter.
To some people, it does.
At which point, did I use the word stupid?
I know.
Or dumb?
Look at the backlash against the Ender's Game movie. I'm not going to go see it because Orson Scott Card.
Well, okay, but here's another thing, is that for some people, and I completely get it, it is hard to separate the artist from the art.
And that's something that we've talked about.
And I completely understand that because some people are so vocal that they can taint their own creation by being unpleasant and loud and in public, okay? It's not fair, but it's human, okay? To react, you will often react because your instinct to read the book, Ender's Game, if you don't like what Orson Scott Card is saying, you're not likely to pick up his book, okay? He has just lost a sale because you have no reason. If you find him offensive,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to likely sit there and go, well, I want to read what he wrote.
Right.
You're not going to. Okay?
Even though it won a Hugo.
Yeah. But
even though it's considered one of the best science fiction novels of its time.
Sure. But also you have folks, and we've talked about this before a little bit, you have folks aren't going to read H.P. Lovecraft because H.P. Lovecraft was racist.
Right.
And
but see, it's interesting how that narrative changes because it's only been in the last decade, maybe, that all of that has been part of the discussion.
A Lovecraft is a racist?
Well,
that's not the last decade.
I'm talking about as loud as it is.
Well,
okay. And again, this goes back to the internet.
Yeah, I think the platform's bigger. I mean, Lovecraft scholars have you know, anyone who looked at Lovecraft in the context of the world that he lived in would know that A, he was racist. B, he married a Jewish woman, so he wasn't completely racist. And wait, okay, he's not a black and white binary.
Right.
You know. And a significant chunk of the country was racist as well. They were also bigoted against Asians and the Irish, which are not a race. They're just a people.
Yep.
From a country called Ireland, which makes them the Irish. They're the same as everybody else, just like, you know, Asians are the same as everybody else. It's just it's melanin counts, people. And but so, yeah, I mean, it's context. And you're looking at the world. So you look at some of those nobody knew in the vast readership how Orson Scott Card felt about anything
right.
when Ender's Game was published. Nobody knew how Isaac Asimov felt about anything in the vast readership.
Yep.
Or Bradbury or...
Anne McCaffrey, Ursula Le Guin.
Because they didn't have a platform. Maybe you got a fanzine. Remember fanzines?
Well,
once a month,
if you had a platform, you didn't say anything. You didn't spout off on politics or anything else
because
I'm a book writer. I write books. I tell stories.
Right.
You buy my books. That's the deal.
Right.
That's what we do.
That's the issue. And to some degree, the idea of the fan or not fan, the celebrity author has become... It's perfectly understandable. I mean, fans, and you've got an avenue to connect with them now. You can talk to them on Twitter and things like that. That's great. But you end up with celebrity figures and it's like sports figures or actors or whatever. Somebody asks them what they think. And in a quite rational way, they either sit there and say, I don't have a comment at this time, or they give you an answer, which they get to do. They're allowed to give you an answer on any question they want.
And
writers as well.
Funny you mentioned sports in Hollywood, because those are the places where we see this same kind of intolerance that the sad puppies are accusing the science fiction fandom Worldcon of doing. You look at, as an example, Mayim Bialik from Big Bang Theory.
Mm-hmm.
She plays Amy Farrah Fowler.
Sure.
And she's Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And she just went and visited some friends in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And she tweeted, hey, I just took a trip to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And she said the hate mail
mm-hmm.
that she got
sure.
just because she said she went to Israel.
Sure.
And this interview here, she says that I've gotten a lot of negative attention for visiting Israel. That's what amazing. Simply by going to Israel this summer and saying nothing more than I've gone to Israel. I got the same amount of hatred and threats and anti-Semitism for actually making a statement trying to support people, whether I like it or not, serving in the military. She said that reveals the truth. She said it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter what I support or believe. The fact that I'm Jewish and go there is enough. That should be alarming to most people. But then she talks about the tolerance of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So in general, it's never going to be trendy to be observant or religious in Hollywood circles. There are people I know of faith, and we tend to congregate together.
Mm-hmm.
She says, I have an unwavering faith in the power greater than myself, and I don't think that will change any more than my belief in gravity will change. Because they asked her about the difference, you know, how can you be a scientist and have faith? All this.
Binary nonsense. Nonsense.
But this is how it is now.
But no, I'm going to argue that.
Tom Brady's a Christian. Leave your Christianity in the locker room. We don't have any place for it here on the football field.
Okay.
This is what the puppies are talking about.
Okay, but
not saying that that's actually the case all the time.
Okay, yes.
But
okay,
this is the perception
is reality.
Exactly,
okay.
That's exactly
what I'm saying. However, there are, it is also a perfectly valid argument. It's okay. First of all, there is the fact that anybody was dumb enough to ask her, how can you have faith and be a scientist, is stupid. I'm going to say, whoever it was, I'm sorry, that was a dumb question.
She said she gets a lot of that.
Well, it's still a dumb question.
Yeah, it is.
Because the reality is that many scientists have faith, and many atheists believe in science and don't believe in science, and I can guarantee you that some of those, you know, being a person of faith is not necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, okay? It doesn't mean you can't be a scientist or can't be a rational person or blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Okay, so it's a fairly dumb question. They are, you know, being religious does not mean you can't be, you know, you can't look at the world and go, science is awesome. Okay. Being religious doesn't mean you have to believe the planet was created in 6,000 years ago or whatever, blah, you know, okay.
Right.
You don't have to believe those things. So, God, that always makes me so angry. It's just because there is no war between science and religion. There is zero war between science and religion. There is a war between people who want there to be a war between science and religion. They've made one up.
Yeah, you're going to have people on both sides that are taking positions no matter what.
But it's a fake fight. It's not actually happening. It's a battle that no one's actually going to. They're just yelling at each other across invisible
the internet.
The problem with everything, whether it's sports or Hollywood or writers or whatever, is that if you stake out an opinion and you are loud and unpleasant about it, and it doesn't matter what it is,
yeah,
people are not going to want to work with you.
Right.
And they're going to want you to shut up and go away. And this is not to say that people don't get to have opinions. We have opinions every week. But the thing is that not everybody wants to hear your opinion. Everyone's opinion is valid. Not everyone's opinion is right. And nobody really gets to be the arbiter of what a right opinion is, because guess what? It's your opinion that they're right or wrong.
Right, but I think in any journalistic endeavor, mm-hmm. if you look at the coverage of a particular topic,
sure.
or controversy or whatever, journalists especially have an obligation, have a responsibility to be as objective as possible and find the facts of here's what happened, here's who said what, and this. And
I would agree that would be a lovely thing to happen.
However, in this day and age, we know that's not the case. We know that because I work.
And it comes back to bite them all the time.
I know. And I think it's going to happen here as well. I think in the long run, I don't know that the Hugos could be fixed, personally.
Not the way they're doing it now.
We'll have to see what effect these rules changes have, if they get ratified, if they get applied, what impact they have. It will be interesting to see how the puppies handle the nominating process next year, because we know there's going to be a Sad Puppies 4.
Mm-hmm.
We know Vox Day is making plans for his own endeavors as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see what works out. And hopefully there are enough people taking part of the process that you get a good balance. You mm-hmm. get a good mix.
I hope so.
And this is something, and we talked about this on H2O, Sonia and I, if you get people who hate what you love, mm-hmm. you know, welcome to fandom.
Yeah.
But
wait, fandom has an opinion? Star Wars versus yeah. Star Trek.
Yeah, exactly. At least be considerate of each other. At least be polite.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be so nice. It would be so nice.
Rational discussion. A rational discussion. An agreeing to disagree. Looking at someone and going, I don't see it that way. And just leaving it at that.
Yeah.
Try it. Don't burn down the house. Don't drill a hole in the boat you're both in.
Yeah. Will Wheaton's law. Right?
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that we certainly encourage when we're talking to people about stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, everybody's a fan. We can all be part of the same group. Mm-hmm. We can all be fans. And going into next year's Worldcon, I'm going to be real interested to see how many numbers they have next year, because I think it's going to be bigger. And you're going to have one of two things happen. Either you're going to have a pretty good balanced slate, or they're going to burn it all down and every category is going to be a no award. I don't see any other outcome next year. It's going to be either they burn down the house to save the house, or like Silverberg says, it's all going to be okay. I don't see any middle ground next year.
Probably isn't going to be any middle ground next year.
No.
No.
All right. And with that, we have survived. We have survived our conversation. We haven't thrown each other out the windows. And one of the things that I think is nice about our friendship is that we recognize that there are points on which we disagree.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
It is.
And I think everybody needs to recognize that there are points on which you're not going to agree.
You know, the thing is that if you were surrounded by people who are just like you all the time,
mm-hmm.
you actually learn less.
I haven't learned anything from you.
I know. I keep trying. I have faith that one day you'll learn. I could teach you and shape you and make of you what I will. But it's look, I don't want to have just people like me all the way around me. I bore me. I want to have more interesting people around me. And are there people that I prefer not to associate with because I find them irritating or unpleasant? Of course there are. Yeah. But it's not because, okay, well, in some cases it's because of their politics, but that's just because they won't shut up.
It's like, yeah.
You're too loud. Be quiet. Go. Be quiet. Go away. Why won't you go away? Please go away. You know, that's fine. Everybody does that. But the fact is, you know, you and I aren't, we have more in common than we have difference, and what we have difference means that we have different opinions. We're able to bring different things to a conversation, and that makes it a more interesting conversation. If we just agreed with each other,
yeah, it'd be boring.
It'd be dull.
Yeah. And speaking of conversation and bringing things to the conversation, if you would like to bring your thoughts to the conversation, you can do it several different ways. You can join us on all the social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube, and Tumblr.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pinterest is mostly for cosplay. So if you're a cosplayer, go right there. You'll see all sorts of fun stuff. You can send us an email, h2o@scififorme.com. You can leave a comment on our site, or you can call our hotline, which is area code 573-42-SCIFI, and mm-hmm. let us know your thoughts. And then also, if you would like to participate in a different way, perhaps monetarily, because, you know, we've got Worldcon going to be here next year, and we would like to have as many resources on hand in order to cover it properly and really do a bang-up job in delivering that. You can support us. You can pledge your support through Patreon. It's patreon.com/scififorme, and contribute a monthly donation of your choice of the dollar amount, mm-hmm. and you can help us do what we do and do more, better, faster. So in the meantime, we'll figure out some other topic to talk about next week that maybe might not be so heavy.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? We'll talk about
tribbles.
They're I don't know. They're small and fuzzy and they go.
Well, there you go.
There we go.
All right, there's next week's episode done. All right. All right, that's
going to be
this. Yes. All right. Thanks very much for listening, folks. I know we've gone long, but it's been worth it. Hopefully,
yeah, I think so.
Hopefully everybody has got some.
Folks, be nice to each other.
Yes. Be excellent to each other.
Be excellent. And read more. Excellent. Read more books.
Absolutely.
Read more books.
That's what we're going to do. All right, that's going to do it for us. We will be back next week with another episode of H2O.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.